This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio. Presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And they give to Najee through the hole. He takes on defenders. He grinds and gets across the 40 to the 45-yard line. And a first down for Pittsburgh. Tyrann Mathieu made the stop.
Indeed. And that offensive line was powering Najee Harris's run. And believe you me, as Max, you were talking about in the first hour, and now we talk about it in the power hour, as we start to unveil, unwrap our MVPs, our game ball guys. You got to, in my mind, the first one I got to give to the fat guys up front. Up front, fat is where it's at. A cultured fan knows that's who gets the job done.
Absolutely. So we're not doing individuals. You just pick five game balls right out the gates. Well, is that how we're doing this?
Well, I'm just giving one to the offensive line. Listen, you know how it's been. It's been a little rough for them, right, all season long. You're hearing a lot of stuff and, you know, this and that and pointing fingers and – by golly, when a good job is done well, you gotta point it out right away. And these guys, they've been under the gun all season long. And I saw yesterday what I saw again this morning, confirmed with the film, is that they were rolling back the line of scrimmage on the opposite side of the ball.
No, they absolutely were. And, you know, and once again, I am not hating on the fact that you gave it to the entire offensive line. I thought the entire offensive line deserved a game ball. I just thought we would kind of go, you know, back and forth with each one.
That's okay. Let's break it down.
But now we've now separated into 17 left of available options after this. but no, I think, Chooks, first and four. I'll start off with Chooks.
Let's start off.
I thought. You know, you pulled the tough assignment. You get mainly Cam Jordan and Ellis for the most part,
right?
That you're dealing with, and both very very good defensive ends. Cam obviously has his history. You know, this guy's a Pro Bowler, All Pro, has done it at a very high level, still doing it at a high level. And it was a tough assignment that he drew, but I thought he had some great blocks. And especially the secondary efforts, one, recovering the fumble, right? I thought that was huge,
right,
for him to be in position to recover that fumble. But the one, and I've been holding this since yesterday.
Okay.
And I need an explanation from you, Wolf.
Okay.
Because when I heard it, the mental picture just went crazy in my mind.
Okay.
You said, like a rampaging rhino through the wicker department at IKEA.
Yes.
That was the full explanation. And for those of you that were either live at the stadium or watching on television, did not hear this beautiful illustration. Wolf was describing on a screenplay, right? Was it a screen or was it a toss play?
It was a screenplay.
Okay.
To the outside.
And I just remember – I was cutting behind the bench as this was happening because I was trying to track the play live, and so you kind of look forward to make sure that the TV cart thing is not going to run you over. It's not going to mow you down. So, as I'm looking, don't make light of that.
Yeah. I saw a guy in New York get his leg broken when one of those things ran over him. His leg.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why I was like, my head's always on the swivel.
That's right.
When you cut behind the bench and it's live action going, because they will move at any moment. But I just remember hearing that it was like, he's like a rampaging rhino going through the wicker department at IKEA. I was like, oh my God, what? What is this? I need to see the replay right now. Right. And it was beautiful. So I would love for you to just set that up again, because I could visualize what you were talking about.
Well, the thing about it was, you know, Chooks can run. That's the thing about it. Whether it's a toss, whether it's a screen, this young man is capable of taking that 320 pounds and get out there in a fashion that does not usually happen with 320-pounders. He gets out there fast, and he's capable of running over people, but he was using stiff arms to lock out on people to create this parting of the wave to be able to increase the yardage. I just thought it was terrific. He's like swatting people, you know. And the fact is, he created a swath by which the back could go. I can't remember what the yardage was, but it was a positive play. And I've, you know, the thing about Chooks is a lot of people don't appreciate his athleticism as a right tackle. You know what right tackles are usually like, right? I mean, most people, they want to get the big stone head, put him at right tackle, that sort of thing. Powerful guy, big, huge, maybe not the most mobile. They'll, you know, have more of the athletic guy at left tackle. But they've got Chooks at right tackle, and Chooks does a nice job of getting out on the run as long as he doesn't, you know, show pony it. You know what I mean? You know, back in the day, we used to call guys that got out on the run, on the hoof, on a search and destroy mission, you know, we'd call it being a show pony if you didn't get a good hit on somebody.
Well, you know, sometimes you're just out there, you're prancing, right? You know, sometimes you gotta show off.
I
you
almost
show
blew
off,
coffee all over.
Yeah,
we don't need that. I already had one spill last week. We don't need anything. I just took a little snifter of it, and then you hit that one.
Yeah, exactly. Stay away from all electronics. Don't need you short-circuiting anything in there,
right.
Wolf.
Got it.
But, you know, sometimes you got to press. Sometimes you a little high knee action, you know. Put the calves on display, you know. I mean, you already got to put the high socks on. I mean, you know, how else do you make yourself known? But, yeah, there's some prancing and dancing going on. But not in this situation. I mean, Chooks was like he was running traffic cop duty.
Right. He was
you stop here.
Away.
You
yes,
stop
you
here.
Stop here. Boom,
no,
boom.
You. No, my guy's coming. Come on. Come on. Watch it. Watch it. Work being done here. I mean, he was definitely directing traffic as he was out there. And we all know how that feels if you're an offensive lineman and you get out there in free space. You know, you want to run. It's just like when the running of the bulls, right? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
And Pamplona, like, listen, this is my alleyway. Why are you jumping around with your little scarf around your neck and your white outfit? It's going to get ruined because this is my day. This is my path. This is not your path. This is bull crossing only. So if you're not a bull, you're going to get the horns, okay? And he was giving them the horns because it was his time to shine. And there was no matador in the arena. The only thing was he was expected to get to where he was trying to get so that he could have the adoration of his teammates. And that's what he did.
Exactly so. And you know what? Like you said, he gave up. There was a half a sack that was credited to Cam Jordan. And that's not even if it, you know, we don't even know if, you know, it would be because of Chooks. You know what I'm saying? There was
an inside move.
I didn't see it.
It was a looping stunt. So technically, he came up the middle on that one.
Okay.
So yes, I will say I did see that one. The Ellis one was one that you could probably credit him more for than the one on Cam Jordan.
All right.
Yeah.
But he is the one thing.
Just
I'll
for clarification purposes.
Yes, and that's what we need, clarification. The biggest thing about with Chooks, he's got the best hands as far as punching on that offensive line. You know, I mean, he's very, very good at the hand fighting. Cam Jordan was a good hand fighter. That was a pretty good battle. I wanted to highlight that in my classic Jurassic Meat Eater matchup of the week, which I did on Friday. But I'm definitely Chooks just had a good game, as did the whole offensive line. We go down to James Daniels. You know, one of the things I saw James Daniels again, taking people off the ball. You know, this guy, he's such a powerful dude. You know, just watching him, it's like, my goodness, we want to see this each and every week because when he gets his ham hocks churning, man, oh, he can displace some people.
Oh, he can displace humans with a very discourteous disposition, which I love.
Right.
In fact, one of the moments I remember about James, he became Scuba James.
Oh, scuba!
When we had the fourth and short, the dive play for Kenny Pickett under center, and like you thought Kenny launched out, James Daniels launched out, and I think he landed exactly next to Kenny. Like that, he looked shot out of a can. He was ready for the low angle. And I think the D lineman sidestepped him outside into the B gap, which is his outside half. And he was shooting down to kind of form a wedge in the A gap.
Right.
And he
just
hydroplaned. It was like fat guy on a slip and slide. You know what I'm saying? It was amazing. I was like, listen, Somebody's shin would have been broken had they been actually standing in his way at that moment. And it was like, he was like, no, we're getting this first down. You could see the effort. I thought that was a nice highlighted moment that in my mind, watching the play and just seeing that, like, oh yeah, he was ready for the dive. In fact, he was probably asking for it to come in his A gap versus between Mason and Kevin Dotson. He's like, you should have came in the right side. Don't go left. Go right. It's right for a reason, right? And so, but he was ready to rock and roll. So that was cool to see as well.
All right. So then we move to Mason Cole. And Mason, again, good, solid play at the center. Directing traffic, making sure people are together. One of the things that I noticed over the past, let's say the first, you know, several, 8 games, is the fact of the matter that I thought they did a much better job of zone blocking schemes on the inside and outside from the inner triangle, what I call the two guards and center. You got the three Bs there.
Yeah.
All right, so they did an excellent job of staying within their zone radius reads. You know what I'm not all that familiar personally with the zone schemes because I came up in a trapping scheme and I played with with man blocking schemes the whole way. And the zone schemes were just proliferating a little bit when I was leaving the NFL. So just watching them, you know, you can overstride on a guy that's in your zone lane, but then you've got to release him to your man to your right or left and then come off and pick off the next guy that's on your radar. And to me, that's got to be very difficult.
Yeah, no, it is tough, and he did do a good job. In fact, there was a couple of times where New Orleans Saints actually went into a bear front on them.
Yes.
Which a bear is center is covered and both guards are covered. So you have usually a zero technique with two, what we call three techniques, or outside shoulder of the guards on both sides. And I thought Mason held his own against Shy Tuttle on more than one occasion to create the gap to keep Najee front side on a lot of those things. Because Najee, you know, every once in a while has that propensity, but forcing his way forward so that Najee could continue forward. And one of those plays you was talking about was that 5-yarder, right, early in the game.
Yes.
And talking about that was the epitome of kind of the mindset. That's something that Mason brought to the table.
Yep.
Was that he was able to get that head front side and keep driving that backside shoulder with high hand pressure to keep the play front side. So Najee did not have to think, oh, I got a two-way go. It was like, nope, you're going this way because this is where my body is.
Yep.
Keep the ball front side. And I thought Najee did a good job of reading off of that. And Mason was a big part of that success outside of being the conductor, pre-snap.
Exactly so. And I just thought it was a great job. That was well explained by you. Left guard, Kevin
but
Dotson.
But not Spillane.
No, not Spillane.
Just Splain.
That was just Splain, man.
Yeah.
Kevin Dotson impressed me yesterday because I will tell you, when he got locked onto a guy in pass pro, he didn't go backwards, man. I mean, when Kevin Dotson is locked in and playing well, maybe a healthy body, all those things, he's in the zone, he's killing it. This guy's just a body beater, man. I mean, he puts a beating on people. And when he locks on and pass pro, I mean, the other guy looks like a marionette puppet sometimes.
Yeah, no, George Foreman.
George Foreman.
That's what I think of when I watch Kevin Dotson play.
Okay, I can see that.
Especially with the big white gloves, they're taped up. I mean, he looks. He fights like
but
a prize fighter.
But he's got hair, though. He's got hair, unlike George.
I mean, he's got hair, but it's a helmet, so technically it looks like he doesn't have
okay.
hair. Right?
Okay, you got a point.
Smooth, shiny, just
yep.
saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the way that he delivers body blows, when he's allowed to physically fire off, I mean, it's like the body shots that George Foreman used to give people,
man.
Right?
Yep.
I mean, that left hook and that right hook, I mean, when he hooks it, I mean, that's exactly what he does. And it is very violent. It is very unpleasant to experience. And he's just a physical. The biggest thing, I mean, and we talk about this with Kevin, is just health, being available. But when he's available and he's on his screws and we're doing things like this, running the football, it's a thing of beauty. You talk about mass destruction. Like, that's what he brings in the run game. So I'm right there with you, whereas – I look and I'm like, all right, this is exactly what, you know, what we need, what we needed from Kevin. And this was the perfect circumstance for him to really put his skills on display. And I mean, he physically on some of those slants, I mean, slant be gone. It was slant be gone. It was like when you have detention and you got to clean the chalkboard, you know what I'm saying? That's exactly what he was. I mean, he was erasing it. He was erasing the chalkboard. Anything you wanted to do, you thought about doing, if you came into contact with him, it just, you know, it was straight divergence from what you were trying to do.
Absolutely. You know what? Well, I'm thinking about it before we move on to Danny Moore because, oh, by the way, I read George Foreman's autobiography some years ago.
Yeah.
And before one of their classic matches, Foreman and Muhammad Ali, Ali went to the gym where Foreman was training before.
Yeah.
He saw the heavy bag that Foreman had been working out on, and the thing was bent like a banana because of the power of George Foreman. And they said, and this was somebody was there with Ali. They said Ali just was like blanched. I mean, like the look on his face was like, you gotta be kidding me. Because the bag was so deformed from the heavy blows that Foreman would hit that bag with. And I thought that was very interesting. You know, George Foreman, like he said, everybody's got a plan until you get hit with the right hand.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and that's funny. That's what I was referencing was because that was the power, and that's what I was thinking about.
Yes, exactly.
From the book as well, from the hooks. I mean, his hooks were devastating.
Devastating.
You're talking about like he meant to break ribs on every time he swung.
Yes.
In a hook position. That's why you never wanted to get in a clinch with him or get tight with him. And that's why.
How about not even get in the ring with him?
Well, I mean. If you think you're fast enough to escape it and keep your distance, if you have a longer reach than him, I mean, you might have a shot until you get tired and your legs are gone. But you know that's the whole point is that you don't want to get into tight quarters with him, just like you don't want to get in tight quarters with Kevin Dotson, because bad things happen. And you know, not to say you're going to be peeing blood, but you might.
I
don't know.
You just might. No doubt about it. And the last guy up front there. Because we'll use this time then be able to go to break. But the last guy up there is Danny Moore, who is he just keeps getting, you know, he's working at it. He's working at his craft. He's getting better. I just wish if he could get his feet planted more, if he was able to keep his kick step consistent so he didn't get caught with his feet together. That's the one area where, you know, I think so much of this young man, just watching him grow as that left tackle. I mean, it's hard. You're the left tackle. You know what it's like, Max. You did it. I mean, it's the hot box corner. You get the best pass rusher time in and time out. And it's a difficult situation because you got some good pass rushers here in the AFC North, and you're going to get them, you know, two times a year. And that's what they draft a guy for. They know, okay, we got to get somebody that can neutralize some of these hot pass rushers, and Danny Moore is the guy. And I love what I see in his growth. I'm looking forward to more. I'll say this. He fights every play.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, Danny, you know, had a little bit of rough patches in some of the pass pro stuff.
Yep.
With Passignon, and Granderson.
Passignon. Like El France.
Well, you know, because I forgot what I think I called him Kapasnan earlier during the broadcast, and then I had to go back and read the pronunciation guide.
Oh yeah.
Because. But I heard Billy say it so effortlessly, and I was like,
"That's what happened."
Dang it! Yeah, exactly. You know, he just knows. Boom! Yep. Go to the pronunciation guide. If something looks a little wacky, go to the pronunciation guide. Make it easier. But yeah, he had some moments, and like you said, I think that's the biggest thing that Danny has to continue to work on, is just consistency and confidence with your sets. You change your sets because you lack confidence in your set. And you're always like, okay, that didn't work. Okay, oh my gosh. Okay, so that sucks. Now I need to go to this. Okay, let me try this out. Okay, well, I did this, so let me try that. And once you start thinking about your footwork, and then you're thinking about the play, and then you're thinking about the guy in front of you, you've already, you know, thrown everything in the blender and spin it up in your mind, right? So now you're like, okay, I thought I had blueberries, I thought I had strawberries, I thought I had cream, and then you blend it all up, and you're like, okay, it's a smoothie. It's a smoothie in my head, guys. Too many thoughts going around at one time, and And so, and now you're trying to pick the strawberries out of a smoothie, essentially. That's what he, that, you know, and that's what I see with Dan, is that he's constantly thinking about it. And when you think about it, that makes you hesitant, makes you a little late, that makes your feet click, that makes you turn to the sideline too fast. Like, all of these things create a cascading effect on you in the game. But I like the mental toughness of Dan, that, you know, he doesn't allow it to bleed into the next play. You know, now he's trying to just speed it up in his head, but it's going to come with reps, and confidence is going to make him more consistent. I think he's getting those things, but once again, still young, second year in this position. Usually, guys, when you go to that left tackle position, it usually takes about 3 years to get it where it's just right. You know, when you get in a car for the first time, Wolf,
right?
Then the seat is like, you know, you got that nice new car scent, but yet the seat's not quite where you want it. You got to adjust the tilt. You got to let it back. You got to change the back, the lumbar support. Where's my headrest? You're worried about, steering column. Is it too low? Is it too high? Does it telescope or not? You know, you're worried about all these other things. But then when you've had the car for a while, you just go, and if you have that type of car, you hit settings number one. Or if nobody else drives your car, it's already set to how you like it when you get in there. That's what he's working towards. And it takes time to get to that. So now, there are exceptions to the rule, but there are more standards versus the outliers. Outlier being Joe Thomas, right?
Correct.
Joe Thomas came to this league, built like a left tackle, played like a left tackle. He was a left tackle. He is the left tackle, right?
Yes.
By definition. And then other times it takes a little bit of time to get into it. Think Jackie Slater, right? You know, and
correct,
how he played so long, it took him a while to fall into that left tackle position. But then once he got it, he played 18 years in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? So,
right.
So sometimes it takes a little bit more time. Sometimes guys pick up on it quicker. But the standard is usually about by year three is when you're fully comfortable with what you're doing and the confidence in your set. You have your set, you know, kind of tool belt, where you pull it out kind of like Batman, right? You know, I got the right thing for this. Okay, I know who this one is. Boom, I got this one for that. That's what he's working towards. But, Wolf, with that, we're going to step aside.
Thank you.
I got it on time this time. I did it without having to be reminded. And we're going to continue. We got more game balls out there.
Yes.
More superlatives to hurl upon these young men. So we will do that when we come back here in the locker room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN and SNR Radio.
Is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I might not have gotten as high this time, but it was fun. I mean, those moments, it's hard when you're in the actual moment to feel. I mean, it's just full body chills, and it's like you wish you could freeze time for just 1 second while you're looking around and people are going crazy, but just super happy morning and get the win today.
You know, that was the great TJ Watt talking about his reappearance at Acrisure Stadium, coming out of the players tunnel. I can't even imagine what it was like, because the house was rocking just big time, Max. When he took the field, it was almost like the crowd was anticipating that so much. It was like all this enthusiasm just poured out from the stands into the players. And I think part of being a great player, and which the Steelers have had so many over the years, but part of being a great player is your ability to lift others up. And he really does a great job of lifting other players up.
It's you know, for every stick of dynamite, you need a match, right?
Right.
And he is that match. Dynamite does not do damage until it's lit, and you need fire for that, and you need a match, and that is exactly what TJ Watt is. He is absolutely – he's more like a flamethrower, let's just be honest.
Could be. Or the pin that you pull on a hand grenade.
That is true. That is true.
We're coming up with every sort of metal. By the way,
think about this. Have to remove said pin. So technically he's the finger that pulls the pin.
There you go. By the way, I remember when my son was at West Point, Kyle Jacob, right? He's at West Point, and thank you for your service, my son, by the way. Appreciate you so much. He's at West Point. I call him one time. It was in like August, and I'm up at training camp, and so I'm just calling. It was his sophomore year, freshman year at West Point. I said, what'd you do today? He says, well, we learned how to throw hand grenades, Dad. I said, you learned how to throw? He goes, well, we threw hand grenades. I'm like, you're kidding me. Are you, what?
Yes.
And I was like,
yes.
First of all, I've never gotten to do that. I want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing. You weren't like terrified for his life. You were just jealous that he got to throw hand grenades. Yeah, that's when living vicariously through your children just won't cut it, right?
I want to throw a hand grenade. Wow.
It's like, no, next time family weekend, we're throwing hand grenades. Where's your CO? Refuse to let you go and do something that I've wanted to do this my whole life. And you chose a school, and you go there, and you get to do it. Not fair. I'm your dad. I'm throwing hand grenades.
Absolutely. You know, what are you going to do?
Oh, man.
But anyhow, yeah, exactly. I digress because I took us away from our talking point, which I often do.
It's okay.
Because I'm wanting to tangent.
It's fluid. The show is fluid.
Wolf. Yes,
remember
it is.
That? Show us what you said it yourself. So it's never off the tangent if we never hit the topic during the segment, which we're about to do right now. Please proceed, sir. TJ yes. Watt.
TJ Watt, again, you know, didn't have, I will say this, his ability to draw out all the attention from the opposing offensive coordinator is amazing. You watch right away, they tried to test him from the first play, they ran right at him. He and Larry Ogunjobi. That first play, man, I was all jacked up, and Larry O just stuffed the bejeepers out of whoever was across from him there. That was Cesar Ruiz, I guess. And and then you got TJ beat Ryan Ramczyk to the inside, and they combined together to tackle the dude for a 1 yard gain or something. But it was just outstanding right from the get go. They're going to test TJ. They're going to come after him. Hey, is that knee okay? Hey, is that pec injury? Is that okay? Well, obviously it was. And then he goes on to make a big play later on when Andy Dalton is. He's got green grass and high tides in front of him. He's going to make a first down. It's going to lead to, you know, continuing the drive. And he comes up and swats the ankle out from under Andy Dalton. Didn't get a sack, which I thought at the time he got. But then we see that he fell across the scrimmage line. But, again, the things that he does are just – it's amazing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and that was the thing. And not only did they run at him the very first play, they ran at him two times in a row.
Yes. Yes.
To start the game. And the second time, he just absolutely whipped Juwan Johnson and was in the backfield immediately. So I was like, oh, so this was your game plan. Well, you can scratch that off the list. Don't run at TJ Watt.
You're exactly
Learned
correct.
Your lesson. And so I think that was exactly the point, is that he commands so much attention, and for right reasons, right? Because when you allow him to run the hump and chase down a guy, that's what happens. And, yes, Andy Dalton was fortunate to get across the line of scrimmage, so that did not count as a sack. Just counted as a tackle, a very aggressive, very frenzied tackle. But also I want to say he absolutely – Ryan Ramczyk, I know he's also dinged up, and he's dealing with the knee and everything. And – you know, he was out there, but TJ Watt was owning him.
Yeah.
The inside was his move to make. And he took liberties in that on more than one occasion. And I would say that TJ had at least three to four quarterback pressures where he forced Andy to get the ball out early. And that, mm-hmm. I think that's what led to some of the inefficiencies, not being able to put the ball directly on his receivers because of that hidden stat line that TJ brings out.
Yep.
Is that, you know, guys have to speed up their progressions. Quarterbacks have to get the ball out quicker. Receivers have to try and get out of their cuts faster. And sometimes they just couldn't do it because he was in your face immediately. And it's like, throw this ball or get hit in the face very hard by a guy who doesn't like me because I'm wearing a different jersey. That was your business decision you had to make at those moments. And I thought that was something that really helped this secondary out, was forcing the issue, forcing the errant throw or forcing him to throw the ball away. It all made for a good harmony on the defensive side of the ball.
You know, for the sake of journalistic integrity, I got to go back to that first opening series because I forgot that on the first play, you know, with the Saints backed up on their own 9-yard line, the house was rocking so much you got a false start. So we got that.
Yes.
You go from the 9, you're back to the 5. And then it was Kamara running for no gain with Watt and Hayward, and then it was Taysom Hill trying it for 1 yard with Ogunjobi and Watt. So I have to say it just for the sake of journalistic integrity, because we have standards here too in the locker room.
Well, you know, a second physical run play, because you know the penalty does count as technically the first play of the game.
Right.
So you're absolutely right. So you can say, and they probably even on that false start probably was running at T.J. Watt. You know what I'm saying?
I believe so. Yeah.
So technically, it was the first 3 plays of the game. They ran a T.J. Watt, based off of your research.
Based off my research, here.
Only 2 of them counted, though.
true word. But T.J. Watt does do so very much, and again, drawing so much more. We think about it, you know, Alex Highsmith, you know, comes back and is able to notch 2 sacks because T.J.'s drawing a lot of the chips and the walls again. You know, I mean, It's just outstanding when you have somebody like that that can create more opportunities for the other people along. And I think back to last year, how in the world do you get 22.5 sacks, which should have been 23.5 and the record, but you do that when you know the opposing OC is like doing everything he can to nullify you, to make you neutral.
Well, and remember, we did miss him for a couple of games. Last year,
yes,
as well.
So absolutely.
Imagine had he actually played a full 17 games.
Yeah, man.
He would have actually have probably broke the record before that Baltimore game and not needing that sack on Huntley to count. Because so you think about it, he did it in what? I think it was 15 games. He missed 2 games, right? I believe it was 2.
Right, and I think parts of a cut another game or 2.
Yeah, well, he missed the second half of the second game of the season.
You got a good memory, man.
There was a half there. Yeah, well, no, I remember the significant injury because we lost Tyson Alualu that same game.
Right.
So we had lost both of them right there. So that's why it sticks out in my head. And then yeah, so about 2.5 games he missed with rep time. So yeah, no, he's ridiculous. I mean, he is a specimen. And all I can say is he's a specimen. I mean, I don't even know, because there's no human tangible adjectives you can use, because he's that forceful. So you got to go to generalities of, you know, carbon-based beings like that. That's literally.
I guess
literally,
you know, old
he has
man
higher carbon.
Old man Watt must be one heck of a guy. You know what I mean? You have 2 boys that come up and they win Defensive Player of the Year awards. I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, the genes and genetics running through the Watt family must be ridiculous. You got 3, of course, with Derek, you know, and being an offensive guy. I don't know what happened there. You know, he didn't get the defensive gene, but he sure as heck got a good offensive gene. And watching him yesterday, he had a couple of rushes there for, what, 4th downs, 3rd downs, getting 1st downs.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's old-fashioned fullback.
Little Hammer and Henry right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, just boom, boom, boom. Like, oh, Najee's going to get his 100. No, he's not. Derek Watt's going to get the 1st down. That's essentially how it happened.
How about Najee? And you got to give a game ball to Najee. All right? He's been
The
gun. He's been under the gun for a while and taking some heat and everything. And rightly so in some cases, you know, but not rightly so in others. But to see this young man come out and see the man that you know, that's who he is. That's what it was. You're okay, now can this be a trigger point, a reference point where he looks back and says, I've done it before, I'm going to do it again. And I hope this is something that is really he's able to embrace and move forward with.
Well, yeah, no, definitely. I feel like this is a launching pad for him. And let's see. Second half. New life,
right?
Less decisions, more action. I like the mindset that he had coming into this game, and like I said, one of the epitomes of those moments was after that 36-yard run. You know, he gets pulled for an evaluation with the red hat for potential concussion, and just the amount of anger he had.
Yes.
Because he got pulled. He understands the procedure, but he's like, no, I want to make sure we understand this and we're clear. I'm fine. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm good. I'm tired because I just ran 36 yards away from guys who wanted to beat me up. But, you know, just like when you run from school, you're like, okay, I got to beat the bullies to the park. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got to get on my high horse. That was what he had, and wanting to get back in the game because he knew what that momentum looked like. He felt it. And I think for him and the extensive experience he has as a running back and knows when things are in groove with your offensive line, a la his days at Alabama, he could sense, he's like, hey, I don't want to miss this opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to get it now. It's like if you were a time saver salesman in that moment, you probably could have sold Najee a sweet 2-bedroom condo over there in Key West at that moment, right? You know, he was so locked in and so bought in to everything that was happening with the offensive line and with the offense in that moment, and he did not want to miss an opportunity to be in there giving it his all.
And what a job he did do, no question about it.
Yes, he did. All right, Wolf, we're gonna step aside one more time for the bell lap of the show. So I guess we got to be faster with our game balls.
Yep.
Less talking about catalyst dynamite and hand grenades when we come back. So we're gonna toss a few in the good old virtual firing range that's attached to our locker room, and then when we come back, finish up with the end of the show here in the locker room at Wolf and Starks on ESPN and SNR Radio.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Hey, I just want to point out that if you missed any of the iconic moments that shaped Pittsburgh Steelers history, say you weren't there, you weren't even born yet, or maybe you were born and you weren't really a fan at that point, and now you are. Well, good news. We have you covered with the all-new All of Honor Museum located right at Acrisure Stadium, right above the Steelers sideline shop. And the interactive exhibits, which include interactive videos, musics, calls to learn about each moment and each player, archives. Fans can view 6 championship rings, artifacts from all over the greater Western PA area, as well as across the country from great Steelers of the past, donating into the museum, game-worn uniforms. It's beautiful. You know, Wolf, you got to see the museum. I got to walk through the museum over this past weekend with Heath Miller, and it's absolutely stunning.
Yes.
I mean, the Steelers did a tremendous job letting you walk through the timeline that is the Pittsburgh Steelers from present, from his humble beginnings. You know, it even shows, you know, the McGinley Rooney Boxing Association, right? Their boxing club they had back in the early 30s up until the time they actually made the purchase of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the history that ensued. All of the coaches, all of the famous players throughout the years. There's uniforms, life-size, you know, embodiment replicas of the players wearing their uniforms. There's real hair used for the Troy Polamalu one. I just like to point that out. It's not Troy's hair. Troy did not cut his hair to be put in the museum, but it is real human hair. I thought that was humongous. But it was so much fun to watch, and especially to walk through with Heath and his family on the night that Heath gets inducted into the Hall of Honor. It was a special moment. I walked through with, I think, a guy who will also be going into the Hall of Honor sooner rather than later, one number 7, Ben Roethlisberger. It was great to see the teammates, and we had a great time. So I just want to make sure I steer people. If you want to go book your tour at the Steelers Hall of Honor Museum, go to steelers.com/museum. The hours are Wednesday through Monday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., last tour of the day being at 3 p.m., and days and hours, of course, are subject to change. It benefits the Art Rooney Scholarship Fund, but it is truly If you love history, if you love the Steelers, well, you're in luck. That is the place to go, Wolf. And there might be a little surprise in there. You know, you might catch little, I think, Easter eggs of you and I throughout the museum, Wolf. I guess that's our best way of saying we did not get featured at all, but we're there. We're part of the history.
We're part of the history, man. It's such a privilege and an honor to be able to do the things that we've done, and I am so very grateful for everything. You know, I mean, it's just awesome. You go through there, and I'm sure you were like I was. Some of those pictures, they take you back to a moment, but then some of the videos put you in the moment, and it was just absolutely incredible. And I thought Alec Balenciaga did a great job in putting videos together. Bob Labriola, the historian of the Pittsburgh Steelers, wrote just about every word in there and putting this thing together. A huge job by Labs in pulling this thing off, and so many other people that were all part of this. It was just really a great job by these people to bring you something, all of us Steeler fans, something that is so different than anything I've experienced before with the Steelers. So it's an opportunity to really see it as, you know what, get all those little nooks and crannies of Steelers franchise history out in the open with, you know, understanding. It was just tremendous.
No, it was indeed. So we invite everybody to go out there, book your tour, go see it. And it's definitely a destination point if for Steeler fans across the country. You gotta make it there, and you gotta see it. If you have time before a game, or you're staying in town the day before a game or after, I encourage you, go see it. It's special. All right, Wolf, we're gonna have to do a little rapid fire water cooler here for our game balls. How many more do you have left?
I got three defensive.
Okay. I'll let go. We'll just name all three of them, and then I'll name. I have a defensive if there's no overlap, and then I have another offensive one.
Okay. We'll go number one, DeMonte Casey. You come off of 9 weeks of, you know, getting you got screws and plates in your arm, but you come
Bionic
man. He is the bionic man. He came over, great hits and an interception. There's one. Second one I would give to Robert Spillane. I thought he did a great job standing in for Miles Jack, led the team in tackles, was a consistent run stopper throughout. And the third one that I throw to is Alex Highsmith because of the fact that he had a couple of sacks.
Okay, well, I love it. And DeMonte Casey was going to be my other game ball as well, so we concur and overlap on that one. Good stuff. Deontay Johnson. I'm giving it to Deontay.
There you go.
Because I thought Deontay came up big. I thought he had some great plays. And, you know, and that's what you're talking about. You know, when your main receiver, you know, is now that focal point, and for him to still just execute at a high level, that was something that just made me happy. And so Deontay, you know, the four catches for 63 yards, but that long bomb of 36 yards down the sideline was a huge play.
Big play.
So I got to give it to him. Got to give one to George Pickens. Because not only did George Pickens have a rushing touchdown in this game, but he had that beautiful end around as well. That was just awesome. And of course, to go along with three catches for 32 yards, you know, those were my two other offensive that I had to get in there because I thought they did a good job. Especially when you're talking about, well, what can we be without Chase Claypool? I think we're doing just fine. Saw a lot of reps from Miles Boykin and company. But it was really cool to see. So, all right, Wolf, we've given out all our game balls.
That's it, man.
We've ran the bell lap. Now the horses need their carrots, preferably carrots shaped like lasagna, if we had a choice.
You ain't kidding.
But if you missed any of our show, just please feel free to go and download either on the Steelers mobile app or on the iHeartRadio app or wherever else you get podcasts. We are there. You can get our show in the locker room of Wolf and Starks if you search it. It's updated daily, so you get all of this. If you didn't hear it live, you get to hear it on replay. And luckily, all of these episodes age well. But also, you can go get The Blitz. Wes and Motsi doing their job. I listened to it the other week, and I was having a good time just laughing at both of them. They're great. They're a great show and a great listen.
Wow, they sound like Tom cool guys.
Yeah, they do. They do. If you don't say so yourself, right? and then also – You know, the Godfather will be dropping his podcast twice a week. Actually, it'll be starting tomorrow. Tomorrow, Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can get the Godfather, Stan Saverin, dropping his news and bits. And, of course, tomorrow, it's a big day. I'm not going to ruin it just yet, but there might be a pretty cool Steelers Week in Review hosted by somebody that we know. Apparently, he's a really cool guy, but I don't want to burn it yet. I like to overkill it on Tuesdays.
There you go.
Along with the Mike Tomlin press conference. And then, of course, Game Day Podcast with Bob Labriola and Mike Tomlin. All right, we've paid off the family of SNR radio shows and podcasts. You do the rest. Like, subscribe, listen. We love you guys. Have a great day today, and we'll be back here tomorrow. Same bat channel, same bat time on SNR and ESPN Radio. You're in the locker room.